Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 18, King Yayati Regains His Youth. Today, text 30 through 32. Text 30, Nahushaya Sutam Dattva Saha Sharmishtayoshana Tamaharajan Charmishtam Adhastalte Nakarhichit. When Shukracharya gave Devayani in marriage to Yayati, he had Sharmish to go with her, but he warned the king, "My dear king, never allow this girl, Sharmishta, to lie with you in your bed." Vilokyaushanasim rajan charmishta suprajam kuchit tameva vabre rahasi sakyapatim rito sati. O King Parikshit, upon seeing Devayani with a nice son, Sharmishta once approached King Yayati at the appropriate time for conception. In a secluded place, she requested the king, the husband of her friend Devayani, to enable her to have a son also. Text 32, word meanings, Rajaputriya by Sharmishta, who was the daughter of a king, Artita being requested, Aputye for a son, Dharmam, religious principles, Cha, as well as Aveksha, considering, Dharmavit, aware of all religious principles, Smadan, remembering. Shukravachaha, the warning of Shukracharya, Kale, at the time, Dishtam, circumstantially, Eva, indeed, Abhyapadyata, accepted to fulfill the desire of Sharmishta. Rajaputra titopatye dharmam chaviksha dharmavit smaran chukra vachakale dishtameva vyapadyata rajaputra titopatye dharmam chaviksha dharmavit smaran chukra vachakale dishtameva vyapadyata Rajaputra titopatye dharmam chaviksha dharmavit smaran chukra vachakale dishtameva vyapadyata. Ladies. Rajaputra Jitopatye Dharmam Chaviksha Dharmavit शुक्रवशुक्रादि विष्णुमेवाद्यपद्यते. Translation: when Princess Sharmishta begged King Yayati for a son, the king was certainly aware of the principles of religion, and therefore he agreed to fulfill her desire. Although he remembered the warning of Shukracharya, he thought of this union as the desire of the Supreme, and thus he had sex with Sharmishta. Srila Prabhupada's purport. King Yayati was completely aware of the duty of a Kshatriya. When a Kshatriya is approached by a woman, he cannot deny her. This is a religious principle. Consequently, when Dharmaraj Yudhishthir saw Arjuna unhappy after Arjuna returned from Dwarka, he asked whether Arjuna had refused a woman who had begged for a son. Although Maharaj Yayati remembered Shukracharya's warning, he could not refuse Sharmishta. He thought it wise to give her a son, and thus he had sexual intercourse with her after her menstrual period. This kind of lust is not against religious principles. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:11, dharma virudha bhuteshu kamosmi. Sex life not contrary to the principles of religion is sanctioned by Krishna. Because Sharmishta, the daughter of a king, had begged Yayati for a son, their combination was not lust, but an act of religion. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chukshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Raja putriartito patye dharmam cha viksha dharma vit smaran chukra vachakale dishta evabhyapadyata. When Princess Sharmishta begged King Yayati for a son, the king was certainly aware of the principles of religion, and therefore he agreed to fulfill her desire. Although he remembered the warning of Shukracharya, he thought of this union as the desire of the Supreme, and thus he had sex with Sharmishta. This is one of those religious principles that is curious, strange, weird. From our perspective, as we don't live in these times that are, when these historical events took place, we have no experience of such things, at least such things being religious principles. There are other instances. We had this instance here. There are other ones. Of course, Prabhupada refers to Arjuna's returning from Dwarka. The context is Arjuna was in Dwarka, and then Krishna left this world, and when Arjuna returned to Hastinapur, he was grieving, and Yudhishthira could see it in his face. So he was asking him, what could be the reason, Arjuna, that you look so sad? Did you do something wrong? What happened there? So one of the questions he asked was, did you fail to protect women, children, or old men? Which seems to be what Prabhupada is referring to here. And in that speech of Yudhishthira's, that's the only thing that comes close to this idea. So this is considered a kind of protection for women. So Yudhishthira asked Arjuna about it, whether he had failed in this religious duty of protecting a woman who asked him for a son. Another example is, of course it's an allegory, but in the Pranjana story in the fourth canto, so when the daughter of time approaches King Chandavega, I think it is, who's attacking the fort, so he also has to accept her. And Prabhupada makes the same point there, that it's a religious principle. And similarly, when the Pandavas were in the forest and Bhima was approached by Hidimba. Hidimba was a Rakshasi, so not a very attractive proposition. She approached him. She made the proposition. She wanted to marry Bhima. So Bhima didn't want to do it because of who she was, what she was. But Yudhishthira said, no, you have to. It's a religious principle. You're a Kshatriya, so you have to satisfy her and give her a child. Of course, he did, and that child was the heroic Ghatotkacha, who played an important role in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So we have these different stories, and we hear this is a religious principle. So we may wonder why, or at least I do, why would this be a religious principle? We know from the Bhagavad Gita, of course it's a religious principle for Kshatriyas. There's one purport where Prabhupada says householders and Kshatriyas. So I think it really means householder Kshatriyas, not just any householder. But a Kshatriya, this is part of the duty for a Kshatriya. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the characteristics, the work, the guna and karma for the different varnas. So for Kshatriya, Shorya Tejo Dutir Taksham Yudhe Chapya Palayanam Dhanam Ishwara Bhavascha Karma Subhavacham. So Kshatriyas are supposed to have certain characteristics. They are supposed to be heroic. They're supposed to be determined, enterprising. They're supposed to be yudhe chapya palayanam. They never flee from battle. So these you could say, some of these are, here Prabhupada uses the word, I want to discuss this idea, just to go off a little bit. The idea of principle. Prabhupada uses the word principles, sometimes in the context of rules, and sometimes, of course, the word principle can mean, it means a rule, just like we have the phrase, the four regulative principles. So really, they're four rules, and even we sometimes call them the four regs. They're rules. But a principle can mean not only a rule, but something more fundamental, like a value. For example, a country has certain principles. In the founding of our Constitution in the United States, there are certain fundamental principles. And then based on those principles, rules or laws were made. So in thinking of this particular, as Prabhupada calls it, a principle, we might call it a rule. It is a rule that a Kshatriya has to satisfy a woman who approaches him for sex or for having a child, for conceiving a child. So you can say this is a rule, but what principle? What principle does it support? This is why when I said in the beginning, when you ask why is this rule there? What is the overriding principle? What is trying to be accomplished here? Another example of this kind of dual meaning of principle, or rule, a principle as a rule that supports something more, a more fundamental principle, is the idea, a rule, that a woman should not take sannyas. I remember years ago there was a sannyasi giving a class here, back when we were in the old building, so it was a long time ago. And the sannyasi was saying that this idea that a woman should not take sannyas is not a rule, it's a principle. And I thought, I don't think that's true. It's a rule in support of the principle that women must be protected. The principle is the protection of women, and one of the rules that supports that principle is that women should not take sannyas. So here we have the rule, I would call it, that a kshatriya cannot deny a woman when she approaches him. So what religion, what principle, what overriding principle would that cover? Would that be in support of? So one of the things, just I went through this list of what Kshatriyas are supposed to do, how they're supposed to be, what kind of people they're supposed to be. So we have different rules that nurture that in a Kshatriya, that make a Kshatriya able to do these things, or support these characteristics of a Kshatriya. Another idea of principles and rules is that in Vedic, we have an overriding principle, you can say, of Vedic culture, Vedic civilization. The overriding principle is that human life is meant for self-realization, for awakening our Krishna consciousness, for going back to Godhead. So you have that overriding principle or value, and then all of the other rules are meant to support that. Or there's the there's this verse, Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu Vismartavyuna Jatuchit Sarve Vidi Nisheda Ashur Etayori Vikinkara. Because one should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And all of the other rules and regulations are meant to support this one overriding rule or principle. I just came across, I was always wondering about this verse, why it says, always remember Krishna and never forget him. And I thought, why this redundancy? If you're always remembering him, obviously you're never forgetting him. So I found out there, this verse mentions two things, vidhi and nishedha. So vidhi means, if I get these right, there are rules, there are positive and negative. I forget which one is which. So one is do or don't. Just like in yoga, you have yama and niyama. So you have things that you're supposed to do and things that you're not supposed to do. So vidhi and nishedha, rules for doing and rules for not doing, all of those are covered. That's why it's mentioned, do this, remember Krishna, and don't do this, don't forget Krishna. So then again, this is the idea is that you have this override, sarve vidhi, nishedha, all the rules and regulations support this one principle of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. So the kshatriya, so what are some of the principles of kshatriya? Some of them I mentioned, heroism, determination, never fleeing from battle, and so on. Now some of the things that a kshatriya can't refuse, besides this, that he can't refuse a woman who approaches him, a kshatriya can also not refuse to gamble. That's another one that's a little bit curious. We know how it got Yudhishthira in trouble. A kshatriya cannot refuse a fight. And Prabhupada says the fight doesn't just mean ordinary fight, it means fight to the death. So if someone wants to fight you to the death and you're a kshatriya, you have to accept. That's a religious principle. And another is that basically you can't refuse to give in charity. Anything that anybody asks of you, if you're a kshatriya, you have to do it. We have an example of this in the before the Kurukshetra War, where Arjuna went to see, actually Krishna sent Arjuna to see Duryodhan. There's a whole story about how Bhishma said, Duryodhan told, actually must have been partway through the battle, because Duryodhan accused Bhishma of not fighting hard enough. He said, you're soft on the Pandavas, so you're supposed to be fighting for me. So Bhishma said, I'll show you how I'm going to fight. That I have these five special, is that how it goes? Okay. He had five special arrows, right? One for each of the Pandavas. That I'm going to use these tomorrow, and you'll see how good I fight. So Krishna knew about this because he knows everything. So he sent Arjuna there, and he told Arjuna to get Duryodhana to give him those arrows. I guess Duryodhana was holding on to them. So when Arjuna approached Duryodhana, Duryodhana said, just whatever you want, I'll give it to you. That was a kshatriya spirit. And he said, if you want me to give you the kingdom, you want me to just stop everything, I'll do it. Of course, one wonders why he didn't do that, why Arjuna didn't take up the offer. But he didn't. He just asked for the five arrows. But that was the mood. He couldn't be, the kshatriya has this, that's their overriding principle. Whatever anybody wants from them, they have to give it. Just like Arjuna in the fight, Prabhupada makes this point in the Bhagavad Gita. Says that Arjuna couldn't refuse to fight. This was one principle upon which he couldn't refuse, was because a kshatriya can't refuse. He was a kshatriya, he was challenged to the fight, so he had to respond, he had to do it. So even though he was getting weak-kneed and weak-hearted on the battlefield, he had to respond. So, thinking of these different ideas about kshatriya, it seems to me that this is what this principle supports. The principle that a kshatriya can't refuse a woman, because a kshatriya is, he just gives. The kshatriya, now this is very important in the whole makeup of Vedic society, because kshatriyas, they possess a lot. They're very powerful, passionate people. They own land. They own kingdoms. They're in power. So they have the ability. The brahmanas, they don't have much. They maybe beg or they get a little something, and then they have it. Prabhupada tells a story about how after, I think it was the Rajasuya sacrifice, brahmanas would come for the sacrifice, so they would come from all over. And Dhananjaya Arjuna, he had collected so much wealth from all over different places. So all the utensils for the sacrifice, they were all gold, solid gold. So in one lecture, Prabhupada says, so after the king would distribute all of these things left over from the sacrifice, when we have a sacrifice, we pass out half-burnt bananas or apples or something. But after this sacrifice, they passed out gold utensils. But Prabhupada said, so as the brahmanas were walking back home into the forest to their hermitages, they were thinking, why should we carry all the gold? So they would just leave them. They would just leave it by the wayside. We don't need all this gold. So this was the brahmanas. They didn't possess a lot of wealth. So the kshatriya, household of kshatriyas, they have the wealth. So they're supposed to be charitable. Especially, that's one of the most dana mikshora bhavascha. Dana, they have to give in charity. And charity means whatever anybody asks of them, they have to give it. So I would say that in this mood, this is the principle that this kind of strange to our perspective rule that if a woman approaches you for sex, you have to do it. The kshatriyas, they would fulfill the woman's desire because that's what they did. That was their nature. Anything. Now, of course, there are other principles too. We know that sometimes many things can be accomplished by one act or one rule or one principle. Also, as Prabhupada says, it's part of giving protection to a woman. That's a little hard for me to understand how that's giving protection. Of course, if we understand that the woman wants a son, that's because, as Prabhupada said in the purport, just I think it was yesterday, the day before, there aren't enough men to go around, especially in traditional Vedic culture, because many men become renounced. They don't get married. So there are extra women. So it's naturally women want to have children. So there have to be men to satisfy that desire. So this is one way that the given protection means, the woman's desire means that she would just, even in this case specifically that we're reading about today, she approached Yayati at the right time for conception. So that was really her desire. She saw her, or she saw Devayani had a child, so she also wanted to have a child. So this is giving protection. But especially this idea is there with the kshatriyas, how they give. They give and give and give, and they satisfy. There are some other examples of Arjuna in Arjuna's life and his travels. And sometimes, of course, we have to weigh different religious principles. This comes up often in the Mahabharata, where these debates go on about religious principles, which one should be applied in this case, which one is more important. Of course, Krishna and Arjuna are also debating in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. I was thinking of this the other day. One of the arguments that Arjuna made was, well, what's going to happen? There's going to be Varna Sankara. When all the men are killed, the women aren't protected. So I thought, well, what happened after the battle? Did that take place? Where there were all these widows and all the men were missing? What happened? Now, one thing we know, of course, that Yudhishthira was very powerful and generous, and he must have made some kind of arrangement that those who had lost their guardians were taken care of. In any case, this happens. So sometimes there are debates take place. Which religious principle is more important? So Arjuna, one time, Arjuna was, you know that the Pandavas, they had this arrangement. They were all married to Draupadi. So if anyone, if Draupadi was with one of her husbands and one of the other husbands interrupted them, then the rule was that they would have to, there would be no association with Draupadi for a year. And they would go traveling. So this happened to Arjuna one time. There was some emergency and Arjuna burst into the room when Draupadi was with someone else, I forget, Yudhishthira. So then he went traveling. And while he was traveling, he met Lupi, I think it was. So she, actually there are a couple of different stories. Is she the one who's the, yes, she's a Naga. She's a Naga, which means celestial serpent somehow. Apparently they can change their forms. So she brought, I think Arjuna was bathing in a river and she dragged him down to her kingdom. And she also wanted a child from him. So Arjuna started to debate with her. No, I can't. It's not right. And I said, I'm supposed to be a celibate for a year because of this, what happened with Draupadi. So she said, no, that's not really the rule. The rule is, somehow she knew, it's only with Draupadi that you have to be celibate. Not with me. Sometimes there are clever words used in these sick circumstances. These Nagas are clever. So he, of course, he did. They did have intercourse, and she produced a child, Babruvahan, I think it was. Maybe I'm getting stories mixed up. It was. So that was in, supposed, this is connected to the old kingdom of Manipur, supposedly. Now there's another story where Arjuna was in the heavenly planets. Arjuna really got around. He was in the heavenly planets, and someone actually, one of the associates of Indra, he schemed to send Urvashi to Arjuna to seduce him. But when Urvashi came to Arjuna, he said, no, I can't, because you're my mother. And so I can't have this relationship with you because you're like my mother. So she was one of the apsaras. So maybe you remember her name, which came up recently in the Bhagavatam. Urvashi was the apsara who had the association and with Pururava. Remember we were hearing about Pururava, how he had this goddess that he could see her once a year, he could spend one night with her once a year. So this was Pururava. So Pururava is a forefather of Arjuna. We're getting right now into the son of one of the sons of Yayati is Yadu. So Arjuna comes in this dynasty. Or the Kuru, rather, Kuru, not the other, Kuru dynasty. So his forefather was Pururava, who had a relationship with Urvashi, so she was like his mother in his perspective. He knew the history. So here was a case where he didn't do it. He got out of the obligation in this case because there was a higher religious principle taking place. So here in this verse today, King Yayati is described as Dharmavit. One who understands religious principles. We have the Bhagavatam, of course, is full of great personalities who know religious principles. They know all the subtleties, especially in that we're fortunate that we don't have to work out all so many subtleties, so many rules, and how to apply them in different time, place, and circumstance. But where we have it quite simplified, we have rules given to us. Even everything we do, we, of course, have the overriding principle of always remembering Krishna, becoming Krishna conscious. When I would lecture in colleges, I would always make this first point. I said, before, you know, to explain how I look and the things that we do, because people always, they want to know, well, why do you do this? Why no sex? Why this or that? I would say that there's one overriding principle, and that is the purpose of human life is to be Krishna conscious. And all of the things we do somehow support that principle. So we see that here. We see sometimes these rules that are a little hard for us to understand, but we know that there's some important religious principle there that this is in pursuance of. And if we dig a little, we can sometimes figure it out. So the verse again, when Princess Sharmishta begged King Ayati for a son, the king was certainly aware of the principles of religion, and therefore he agreed to fulfill her desire. Although he remembered the warning of Shukracharya, he thought of this union as the desire of the Supreme. And thus he had sex with Sharmishta. Any questions or comments, Madan Mohan Prabhu?
I thought about this sometime. And one of the the principles that I've noticed with Ksatris, they used the word destiny. It was in a couple other times. And then I thought about heroes. And then we have this saying, Rake Krishna Moreke, Moreke Krishna Rakeke, that you depend on Krishna, and if it's my time for you to kill me, I'm going to be killed. If it's my destiny that I'm not going to be killed today, you can't kill me. And they became great heroes by having that dependency on Krishna, because that's, you know, to feel always protected by Krishna. So if you apply the same, was that all right? You had to think about that one. The idea that, in other words, there is a certain destiny, and Prabhupada oftentimes would tell us that your destiny, how much happiness, how much wealth, those are already fixed up. What you can change is your Krishna consciousness. These other things can't. So, of course, they have their understanding that if I die in battle, I go to heavenly planets. You know, you can't lose. It's a no-win, no-lose situation for a kshatriya if you accept everything, and then the destiny plays out. So in all these circumstances, we address women as mother because they take their body to have children. They're not barren like that. And if you take it up a couple more notches, just like when Krishna, with the cow, her boys were stolen by Lord Brahma, Krishna had a very unique problem-solving skill there, where he just expanded himself into all the children and all that. So this parental affection in this material world is a perverted reflection, but the whole idea of existence is to develop your love. So this is, they have a body, they have children. Sometimes when, in the early days of the movement, when the devotees started having children, and they said, well, now I can't do my other service. You know, I have some service, and I have to take care of my children. And for a while, it was a bit of a problem. Their children were starting to be neglected, and thinking that was the right thing to do. And Prabhupada said, no, the children are your deities. You know, to take care of them. And I remember that was kind of like a shock when that came through, and still some temple presence had a problem with it. But it was that this is a very important thing. It's not just, you know, like family life with a depressed type of mood about it. So there's all these other underlying principles too, not overriding. I don't know, underlying is that the purpose of life is to develop this love for Krishna, and even in the material world there's love. We had that nice story by Ridhananda Maharaj in 72, was it, when he was in New Vrindavan, and a kitten rolled onto Prabhupada's lap, and, you know, with Ridhananda Maharaj's humor, he was saying this was like a catastrophe because animals are so condemned for always being so moochy. How could he even touch one? And then, to his amazement, Prabhupada petted the kitten, and it was two of them. They were scrapping it, and he said, just see, even there's love in the animal species. So, well, those two points. It takes a while.
Trikram. Haribol. I was studying this Kshatriya rule, but you see, there's also other principles that they have to follow. It's stated that the higher class cannot cohabit with like Sudra women or lower. See, I mean that's there, because then the demigods will not take their sacrifices. So there's a lot of other things, and this might seem like in exceptional cases. You see, Sharmista was the daughter of a king. Rakshaking. It might be like in exceptional cases, like Hidimba, you know, but not in it, because there were so many maid servants there too. If all of them say, well, look, you know, come on, Yayati, you know, I mean, so he couldn't have done that really, but in exceptional cases, I think this is where the Kshatriyas can.
Well, it seems like that's the rule, and then there are exceptions to the rule. The rule is that he has to comply. Unless there's an over, you know, stronger reason that it can't. Now it's interesting here. This, the Prabhupada mentions He thought of the union as the desire of the supreme. I'm looking at this, the word for word, and the only thing I can see is the word there is dishtam. Dishtam, which means circumstantially. So I assume that that's what Prabhupada is referring to when he's translating this like this in the translation. So as Madan Mohan was mentioning about the destiny, took it as destiny. So it's not that we just take everything as destiny, though. I mean, if a woman approaches me for sex, I can't say that's destiny. It's destiny. He thought of it as destiny because he was Dharmavit. It was destined to happen, but because it was according to religious principles. There's another, I was thinking of the phrase in Catholicism, they have the phrase, the occasion for sin. One is supposed to avoid the occasion of sin, which means stay out of places where you're going to get in trouble. And don't put yourself in circumstances where you're going to sin, be enticed to sin. So, we can't say that anything is destiny that happens to us. If we're being seduced by a woman, that we can't say that's destiny, and then I have to comply. But one complies, or he saw it as destiny, or I gave a whole class one time about the whole idea of destiny and God and providence and, you know, karma, all these things, higher power, how they all work together. So is it divinely ordained or not? Well, it's whether we have to judge it according to whether it's a religious principle or not, whether or not we take advantage of the opportunity or the circumstances there. So that seems to be what he did here, and his seeing it as providence was because it was according to religious principles.
But he still got in trouble. He still got in trouble, though.
Well, sometimes even in following religious principles, there are reactions. Yeah.
I was just thinking of how, like in modern day ISKCON, how does all of this intertwine with ISKCON, or how does it affect ISKCON today in a sense? Because like Srila Prabhupada gave us a completely rigid program, and it doesn't really include kshatriyas. And sometimes, someone who likes to fight, or he's strong, he walks around with his chest out, I'm a kshatriya, and I have to protect everyone here. And so it seems like all of this information is just there for information's sake, but actually we have a different program. Is that?
I think in some ways that's true. What we learn from these things is we learn about real character. We learn about adherence to religious principles. The principles or the rules have changed according to the ages, but we see the dedication to them. We see what happens when you don't follow the rules for certain ages. So there are lessons. That's the thing, and that's why Prabhupada writes purports, because we gather lessons, we get certain lessons from these things, even though they're so foreign to us now. I often bring up this point. You look at the Battle of Kurukshetra and you see the kinds of things that went on, or just the idea that somebody could have 10 million wives and say, well, obviously, these are quite different people than we are. So a lot of things seem so strange to us. But still, they're overriding principles. They're basic elements of human civilization and how we're supposed to act as human beings. And we see them, these things, we see examples of them in these kinds of situations, and we can apply what we learn here to our modern life. Mamati.
So there are, in this situation, there are two religious principles going on. It was not like he accepted it as a destiny. It wasn't like a sin. There were two religious principles, kind of. One is that, he's being approached, but then the other part that he chooses one over the other one, where he had promised Shukracharya not to do so. And you see that in the other situation with Devayani earlier, that there were again two principles there going on. She asked him to marry him because he held her hand, mm-hmm. but then he was breaking another principle of pratiloma marriage. And so he basically, one principle is being broken and the other one is favored. And so I guess the question that comes in my mind, and I guess maybe I don't know if there's an answer to it, but the question comes in my mind is, we ourselves are put in positions where we have, you know, two principle or two instructions, like by Srila Prabhupada, we come, you know, have to face two things. With both instructions are given by Prabhupada, but we take one over the other. How do we decide that this is the will of the Supreme? Because in both those things, Prabhupada says that they took that as the will of the Supreme. And so sometimes you're in a position we don't know, and then we're thinking, is it our mind, intelligence, saying that this is what Srila Prabhupada wants me to do, or should I take this as the will of the Supreme, or should I take that as the will of the Supreme? We face, you know, that kind of dilemma. If you could comment something on that.
Yeah, it does sometimes come to a point where, you know, the decision is not clear. So we have our authorities, Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. Sometimes the Guru, and we read Prabhupada's books, and we can even in Prabhupada's books, in different contexts, he seems to give different instructions. So all we can do is do the best we can, really. And of course, the purer we are, the more we'll be getting direct instruction from within the heart. We'll be able to perceive directly what Krishna is telling us. Krishna will tell us what to do, clearly, from within the heart. So before that, we have to do the best we can. Just like Prabhupada would say sometimes, you just have to be intelligent. So we have to use our intelligence. Everything is not always spelled out for us exactly, every situation, what we're supposed to do. So we consult Krishna within the heart, and we consult our God brothers and God sisters, and Prabhupada's instructions. And that's why in a recent class I was saying, because there are things that sometimes seem to be contradictory, that's why we have to have we really have to be steeped in Prabhupada's instructions. We have to have a full understanding, a very broad understanding of Prabhupada's, the way he acted in different situations, the way he spoke in different situations. We have to like bring it all in, and then we have to like cultivate an understanding over time, really. We see sometimes, just like somebody first comes to Krishna consciousness and they think they know everything. Like this very, very, sometimes it's an idea very, because our idea is that this whole world is just an illusion and we meant to go to Krishna. So just give it all up. Kind of fanaticism, just give it all up. But we know that doesn't work. So over time we learn how to balance things. We know how to live in this world, and we know how to, we should at least, and with Prabhupada's guidance, we learn how to live in this world. So these things, they're not always black and white answers. So all we can do is do the best we can. And of course, the more we follow Prabhupada's instructions as we understand them, and certainly some of them are extremely clear, then we, as we become more pure, then the direction of the super soul from within will tell us, and we'll be able to see exactly what we have to do. Just like Prabhupada, he said, Krishna tells me what to do. So that stage comes after time. Let's stop here. We're past our time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.